Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast. I'm your host, Michael Jordan, and I appreciate you being here. This is my conversation with Bitcoin Mechanic, who is with Ocean Mining. We cover a range of topics, really focusing on filtering spam and Mechanic's opinions on that particular subject. Disclosure, he has strong opinions that I tend to agree with. And we talk about the centralization challenges of mining in Bitcoin. We talk about what Ocean is doing to fix some of the challenges and the FPPS model versus what Ocean is doing. So a whole bunch of things. He also touches at the end on a couple of hot button issues, the arrest of the Samurai founders, and sort of his hot takes on a few things. So I think you'll appreciate this. I know I sure had a blast talking to him, and overall would say that a lot of what he is talking about is very important and we need to all give a strong listen to. All right, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Bitcoin Mechanic here. Bitcoin Mechanic, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. This has been what I've been looking forward to since before I even reached out to you to come on and join us. But wanted to sort of explain the two reasons I wanted to have you. So first of all, I'm just a fan of the message that I think you're bringing to the Bitcoin space right now. I think it's very important. And I've listened to you, as I told you offline, on a few podcasts. And I want to get sort of clarify my own reasoning for a lot of the things I believe. And I think you're going to help do that. But the second and probably more important thing is, I think right now, as we likely enter this bull run, we're going to have a lot of new Bitcoiners come on online. And I think we need to amplify some of the more thoughtful voices. So, for example, I've only been around a couple of years in Bitcoin, 2 years, and I'm just now reading the Block Size Wars book and beginning to sort of understand what all happened. And I think there are a lot of people who are going to enter the space and have no idea what a lot of the challenges are that we're currently dealing with and who's sort of on the right side of history as we see it and who's maybe wasting everyone's time and resources. So I want to get your thoughts on a lot of these, but I want this to be a very like 101 level discussion. Mm-hmm. And so I want to start with just, let's make this simple for beginners. Can you describe the mining process? Like, how is a new block mined? And then I think we'll get into some more interesting things from there.
Sure. So the mining process is someone that's aware of the full state of the Bitcoin network. This means and entails running a full node. That means they've verified the entire history of what's going on. Wants to satisfy the requirements imposed on them by the greater network in order to be rewarded with money. So the network is saying, we want the longest possible valid proof of work chain, with the most cumulative work. The longer and higher that gets, the harder it is for someone to rewrite history. So if you participate in that process, we will give you new Bitcoins. And if you try and violate any of the rules we impose around what constitutes a valid block, you just wasted a bunch of electricity because you mined something the network doesn't consider valid. So you can either waste electricity trying to mess with us and you won't be successful, or you can participate as an honest participant and then you can make a bunch of money. So that was always like the very crude layout for the game theory of why Bitcoin is a reliable system where you could, the participants all acting in their own self-interest would lead us to generally have a stronger ecosystem for everyone's benefit. So specifically what a miner does, the requirements that are imposed on them is find the latest block and build another block on top of that. Construct it however you like, put whatever transactions in it you want, as long as they're all valid at the consensus level, and start hashing away. Hashing is the last part of this process, apart from broadcasting an actually discovered block. Hashing is something that occurs once you've done all that other stuff. You've run the node, you've synced up with the network, you've verified everything that's going on, you've begun the process of constructing a new template, you've reached out to the network and found the unconfirmed transactions, you put them all in the template, you construct Merkle trees to that effect. Sorry if I'm going a bit beyond 101 here, but once you've done all that, you have the block template. And the template is what you then work on hashing to solve. And that's, you start guessing random numbers. You start putting in nonces. And when you get a nonce that just happens by random chance to give you a certain value when you put it through the algorithm that satisfies the criteria of the nodes, once you get that, you have a valid block. and you guessed the lucky number. And this is easy for the whole network to verify. You just say, hey, I found a valid block. And the entire network goes, yeah, that's valid. And we call it proof of work because on average, you must have done this many guesses to have found that block. And there's no faking that. It's literally just, if I tell you I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 100, on average, you're going to have to make 50 guesses before you find the number. Sometimes you'll get it first go. Other times you'll get it. You'll have to guess literally every number before you get it. But if we run that process thousands of times, it's going to work out on average. It took you 50 guesses each time on average. So that's what Bitcoin mining is. It's random number guessing is done to satisfy the demands of the greater network. And if you're the one that finds the block, you get the new coins that are generated in that block and all the transaction fee revenue too. And once you find it and submit it to the network, the rest of the network starts building on top of your block. And that's what creates cumulative proof of work, which means if you're ever trying to rewrite history from 5 hours ago, you need to compete with the fact that it's you don't just need to rewrite the last 5 hours. The time you spend rewriting the last 5 hours, during that time, the network it went forward. So you have to keep playing catch up, which is where the concept of the 51% attack comes in. Because you need to outpace the network consistently to be able to keep rewriting history. So I'll stop there before I start keep going off on too many tangents.
So the one of the things I want to hit on is a block template. So effectively, you take a value from the previous block, you take a bunch of transactions, and then you take a nonce, which is effectively a random number that keeps changing. Is that correct? Is your hashing, and you're looking for. I mean, I think you can go into as much detail as you'd like, but you're looking for a number that meets a particular criteria at the end of the day, right? You're looking for a hashed output with all of that stuff combined that meets a particular criteria. And then I guess my question is, explain the block template. So in what I'm looking for is like, who defines it? Like it specifically, like is it the pool? Is it the miners? And maybe explain sort of the concept of a pool. Because I think that's something I sort of conceptually understand, and we're going to get to Ocean in a little bit. I sort of conceptually understand what you all are doing. That's a bit unique, but I want to make sure that I sort of understand, like on a slightly technical level, what that is.
Yeah. So you did well, or it was really a good idea to start by asking me what the whole process of mining is, because that's the point, that the hashing component, where you're using this random number or the nonce, that's being done by what we generally refer to as Bitcoin miners. But they're only doing that one part of it. They're not running a node and they're not constructing templates. So the fact that those have been delegated, those specific parts of mining have been delegated to pools, makes pools the Bitcoin miners to some extent. And there's only a few pools. So we're not credibly decentralized in that area. Now, there's a whole bunch of sort of practical dismissal people engage in around that not being much of an issue. And if it ever is an issue, we'll make it not an issue. But really, it's just boiling frog syndrome at this point. Like, it is an issue. It's been an issue for ages. It's not getting any better. In fact, it's getting worse. And again, boiling frogs, unfortunately. We live in a world where you're just able to, you know, you can either, a situation can just get continuously worse, and people can just, I guess it's sunk cost fallacy to some extent, where people are like, look, we've had to comply this much, we better continue complying. So when it comes to mining, you went in two different directions there with what you said, that are like kind of hard to string together, but the grinding out and actually solving an already constructed block that's done by miners, that is fairly decentralized, is pretty good. But the fact that they all rely on such a small group of people to construct the templates means, to the absolute horror of anyone paying attention, there are basically less than 10 people in the world that decide what goes in the blockchain and what doesn't. That's it. And there are 10 people in the world that are the holders and the custodians of all newly created Bitcoin. So that those massively centralizing bottlenecks exist either side of the mining process, whilst the hashing is done in a fairly decentralized way. But because the hashing is all pointed at the same handful of entities, it basically means, very simply put, Bitcoin mining is centralized. And if Bitcoin mining is centralized, then you don't have censorship resistance and you don't have any sort of resilience against government capture or, you don't have the opportunity for you have all sorts of gatekeeping that can occur. Right now, you have these huge monolithic entities basically pull up the ladder and make it so that if you want to mine as a small guy, you basically pay for the big guys to get a free ride. So the whole point of a pool is it needs to be big enough. It needs to be a certain size that it can take you far enough away from solo mining to the point where you would even want to use a pool in the first place. A pool needs to be reasonably large in order to function, though that varies depending on the kind of payout mechanism it uses. But for a pool's own benefit, it needs to be quite big. And for a miner's benefit, if it's using a different type of payout system, it also needs to be quite big for the benefit of its miners too. Otherwise, they're all just effectively too close to solo mining, and then they're getting too much variance. So, oh, I lose my train of thought there, but that means you can only have a certain amount of pools, basically. And that being the case, like you brought up the block size war already. One of the main arguments against making blocks much larger is, the if there's a race that starts every time there's a new block found on the network, for everyone on the network, that means downloading a block found by someone else, verifying what's in it, and then starting the 10-minute race, except one entity, which is the person that actually found the last block who was already aware of it. So if you just mined the last block, you get a head start in the next race because you already know it before everyone else does. Everyone else has to do some sort of due diligence on that block before they can start engaging in the next race, particularly exacerbated by the fact that if you make a mistake, if you send out work based on a block that had something invalid about it, half of the workers connected to your pool will carry on doing that invalid work for up to a minute because that's just the way the majority of the miners on the network are actually designed. It's really bad design, but funnily enough, Ocean mined an empty block last night, which is something that people criticize pools for, not realizing it's an artifact of the bad design of ant miners, which are actually 90% of the hardware on the whole thing. So we can talk about centralization of mining hardware too, which is a horrible problem. But yeah, I don't know. There's a few avenues to go there. Hopefully, we can retouch on all this stuff and start embellishing during the course of this.
Yeah, well, so the exposure, like the vulnerability that centralized mining creates is like one thing you mentioned is government capture. Well, and just general censorship resistance. So I guess hypothetically, if 80% of blocks are mined by a handful of pools, they could collude on what transactions to allow, what not to allow. And maybe there's sort of a contention today that that happens to some degree, or is the impression that they're operating pretty independently at this point in time?
What's happening right now, and this is not like a theoretical thing, this is just what's happening, is I'm just going to go straight into the weeds here. So miners have decided they really don't want variance. That's why they mine with pools. And that method on steroids, or that approach on steroids, means the pools agree to take on all the variance of the Bitcoin network themselves and just pay you out based on what your hash rate is in theory worth. And they'll pay you regardless of if the pool finds any blocks or not. This is called FPPS, and it's a process where you take an average of what miners made for their hash rate over the last period, which is 24 hours, as far as I know. They don't all use that. 144 blocks being 24 hours on average. And they say, look, point your hash rate at us and we'll pay you accordingly. If we find loads of blocks, if we find no blocks, it doesn't make any difference. We'll just pay you. We'll deal with the randomness of Bitcoin. And that is the the main point of mining in a pool in the first place. You don't want to have to wait months for a block and then find several blocks. Even though the average is out to 100%, you might have gone bankrupt before you got through that unlucky dry patch. But delegating all that luck and variance to the pool is not a free lunch. That's what no one really understands. There is an inherent cost to saying to someone else, hey, I might earn 100 grand this month and zero the next month. Can you just pay me 50 grand this month and then 50 grand next month and square up with the ultimate random source of where that money ultimately comes from? If someone tells you they'll do that for free, it's, I always use this analogy of airport currency exchanges where they say 0% commission and you go there and you end up paying something like 20%. Like, okay, you said it was 0% commission. I don't know how you've cooked the books to make it look like that, but this is clearly not 0%. That's what's going on there. So there's an invisible cost, and you sort of look at it perplexed and go, wait a minute, if they're all doing that, why can't someone just, you know, why can't someone break ranks here and do less of this sort of covert theft? Isn't there any competition? And that's where the rub is, because there aren't really any rival pools. There's such a small amount that the competition basically becomes, it's more of a cartel at this point. And this the bombshell around this stuff, it was something we suspected before we launched Ocean, but the proofs are now all coming out. Firstly, Ocean miners are making way more money, which is because we don't use FPPS, right? We're basically the only pool left that doesn't use it. We just pay our miners based on a split of what's in the block, and it's very easy to verify, but it means more variance. So we'll go on a bad luck round for a couple of weeks and not find any blocks, and it's awful for our miners, and then we'll find three in the space of a couple of hours, and they'll have the greatest day ever, right? This is not palatable to everyone, I get it, but the simplicity and the transparency we can offer as a result by saying, hey, if there are no blocks, there's no money. That we are not pretending that we can just pull money out of thin air and give it to you for free. Like, that is not a thing that anyone can really promise anyone. You have to admit that there's a sizable buffer there where you need to operate with a massive deep pocket where you can say, don't worry, if we go on a run of bad luck, we'll keep paying you. The whole lending mechanism by which the smaller FPPS pools make that available to their miners is run by Bitmain. I don't know a heck of a lot about it because it's not very transparent. It's called Ant Alpha, and it's Bitmain's lending program that they use to keep the small pools afloat when they're going on a run of bad luck and they can't afford to subsidize their miners any longer. They either go bankrupt or they have to borrow money. Brains has gone on a recent tear of extreme bad luck to the point where most people are saying, all right, something's up. This is beyond statistical reasonable likelihood. Like, you're under 10% for this round. That should happen once every 500 years, and you've gone on several of these unlucky streaks. What's going on here? I'm not going to get into what I think is going on there because more research is needed, but suffice it to say that all the speculation around it, people aren't really paying attention to what needs to be paid attention to. I hope to sort of do some expose around that soon. But I need to do a bit more research first. So to try and round off this ramble here, Ocean came along with a bunch of conjecture saying the FPPS system must be robbing its miners because no one would ever run this thing forever. No one is going to offer you that for free or even 0.5%, 1%, 2%. It's just not worth it because you can get left in a hole so quickly, especially around things like the halving. And we found the most likely way in which they would steal from their miners is not giving them their split of transaction fee revenue rather than subsidy. So in a block, miners get paid from two sources. They get subsidy, which is how newly created Bitcoins come into existence. And that famously halves every 4 years. It's very predictable and it's very easy to tell if a pool isn't giving you your fair share of that because you can mathematically plan it out over years. You know exactly how much you're supposed to get. Transaction fee revenue, however, that's more like predicting Bitcoin's price. You're predicting block space cost instead of price, but it goes up and down all over the place too. And with the recent pump and dump scams that happen using Bitcoin's block space, that makes it even more volatile. So you might have blocks with $1 million worth of transaction fees in it, and then the next one have 10 grand worth of transaction fees. You can't predict that. As far as we can tell, that's where the theft happens in FPPS, because miners have no way of saying, hey, I should have gotten more for that and I should have gotten less for that. It's really difficult to do. You can do it, but you're going to be within a much greater margin of error when you make your estimations. I've seen people that are massive haters of Ocean, don't like us for whatever reason. Luke's a Catholic, or someone says he eats cats, or whatever nonsense you want to throw at us. Like, I've seen people that are of that particular opinion saying, fair enough, I've done my calculations and I'm losing around 4 or 5% versus what I should be getting from the FPPS pools. Ocean doesn't do that. So here's the history of Ocean since we launched. We got two blocks very quickly. They were both like 5 or 600% luck in a round. I can explain what I mean by that if you need, but basically we got very lucky on those first two blocks. We found a block within 2 days of launch. It should have taken like 11 days or something for us to find a block, and we found two in 4 days. So we got super lucky, but then we didn't find a block for the rest of December. And that was the highest transaction fee environment in Bitcoin's history, with one exception. Around the halving, we went on another run of bad luck. This was like 2 weeks ago or something. Again, we should have been finding a block once every 3 days. We didn't find a block for almost for like 15 days or something. We missed that entire stretch. There were literally blocks in that period that had millions of dollars in transaction fees. We didn't get a single one of them. Despite this, Ocean is still paying its miners on average more than the FPPS pools, despite having gone unlucky.
When you say paying them more, you mean in like nominal terms on a monthly or annual basis, like or per like how are you defining paying them more?
If you just point X amount of hash rate at Ocean and then X amount of hash rate at another pool, you're getting more with Ocean than the other pool.
Okay.
Despite Ocean, one, not including spam as we define it and as it should be defined.
Yeah.
But, you know, people are pointing out, hey, if there's a very expensive spam transaction out there, you know, that exploits whatever bug there is to stuff a bunch of data in the witness field, and you're not including it, you're leaving money on the table. Undeniable, that's true. Two, going unlucky during Bitcoin's two most high transaction fee environments in history. And three, being below 100% average luck. Those three factors should mean Ocean is paying out way less than any other pool. There are two factors that lead us in the opposite direction. One is that we had a bonus period when we launched, which meant I'm not going to get into how that works exactly, because it seems to just confuse everyone when I try and explain it. But it's canceled out. Our miners could have made a whole bunch more money during the bonus period, but they didn't, because we went unlucky during it. Instead of finding eight blocks during the initial ramp up, which was the bonus period, we only found five. That about cancels out the bonus period, so there basically wasn't one. And like I said, that was the December period where we went on that incredible run of bad luck. It took almost 4 weeks, I think, for us to find a block. It should have been an average of every 6 days or something like that. So that was like an absurdly unlucky round. And it was during that high fee environment. So that's the only excusing factor you can have for why Ocean, maybe when you compare it to FPPS pools, it's for a reasonable reason, rather than saying, hey, the other pools are just robbing you. But it's not significant. And there's the other factor, which is we charge 0%. Rather than the other pools, which charge 1 or 2%, but we've adjusted for that. So basically, when there's no monkey business, when there's no buffer between the miner and the network, which there shouldn't be, if you want to be a Bitcoin miner and not just a dumb rented hashing facility, then you take on a bit of additional variance. Sure, an Ocean is tiny, so we have a lot of variance, right? If we had 30% of the network, any bad luck versus good luck is going to be averaged out within a 24-hour period. Instead, it takes a month for us to average out to 100%. That's a lot. That's a lot for a miner to take on. And a lot of miners have said, look, we can't we'll mine with you, but we need you to be 5 or 6 exahash. We can't take you when you're 1.3 exahash. And this is a catch 22 because, you know, it's like, I can't give you a driver's license without government ID. It's that sort of thing. Like,
yeah,
it's, you know, it's, there's nothing you can really do about it. But to the miners that have said, screw it, either for ethical reasons, I don't want to mine with the other pools, or I've done the actual calculations and I've realized I'd be making more with you guys. Those, the people that are with us have consistently said, Bob Burnett tweeted it this morning. Rafa from Swan has come out a few times and said it. We are making more money with Ocean. And I've even, there's another miner of ours that said, I don't want other people to find out about this because it's an edge I have over other miners. The other miners have basically, they've prioritized for cash flow. They get their daily payouts. They get exactly the money they expect when they expect it. But the cost they're paying for that regularity is just, it's so expensive. They are losing multiple percents as a result. So, like, when we started not including spam in transactions, everyone sort of turned around to us and said, well, miners rationally then won't mine with you because they might be able to make more money with spam. And I'm saying, well, in a, if there was another pool like Ocean that did always include all of this spam as well, you might make more. But that pool doesn't exist. Your only other option is FPPS. And that's hugely expensive, and it's dwarfed by the amount of money you can make from spam. So generally the spam, if you compare a core template that would be made by a theoretical pool like Ocean that only mined core templates versus the NOTS templates, which filters out the spam, the difference was a couple of million sats per block. Now Ocean's found, you know, 35 blocks at this point or something. So, I mean, not to do an on-the-fly bit of napkin math, but if you're looking at, this would be the point. So you're looking at like 2 million sats. You're looking at about 0.7 of a Bitcoin. Ocean has mined hundreds of Bitcoin in this point. So the idea that you would, that's way less than a percent, right? I mean, actually, no, it's not. It's a little bit over a percent in total, but it's so negligible when you take these other factors into account. But it's also another mark against us, right? So if we're not including that stuff, if there's something between 1% and 2% lost in transaction fee revenue as a result of not including the stuff that's being used as an attack against the blockchain. And I'm going to show you some stuff on that as well, because I just did a bit of research there. If we're not including that, if we're going unlucky during high fee environments, and if we're not even 100% luck, which we aren't at the moment, and we found 2 empty blocks, that means no transaction fee revenue at all. That was unlucky. It's not due to anything wrong with the pool at all. So I can explain why empty blocks happen as well, but there's nothing untoward there. There's us doing things exactly as we should be. Combining all these factors, Ocean should be have lost miners like 10% of what a theoretical perfect FPPS pool would pay. Instead, we came out ahead. That's just absurd to me. That to me is just yelling at the whole network, hey, you guys, there's a secret here. You can earn way more money on Ocean. You have to ignore a bunch of propaganda and you have to actually understand how this stuff works. But here's where I'll sort of make a comment on the general culture of Bitcoin. There is a massive gap between Bitcoin as it works for developers and users and, you know, people making operating systems for nodes and mining. Mining as an industry is very disconnected from the technical end of Bitcoin. It's a very mechanical end of Bitcoin where, you know, you're dealing with heat and you're dealing with large numbers of, you know, kilowatts and megawatts. And these people are not necessarily all that in tune with what goes on inside Bitcoin core and how it would construct templates and what's appropriate inside those templates. And that disconnect is why when someone like Luke comes along, who's the longest tenured Bitcoin core developer, who was also the first operator of a pool, him and Jason ran Eligius, which is Ocean V1. They ran that for years as a hobby project and they did everything right. And they just running servers in Jason's bedroom, they got 20% of the Bitcoin network and they just gave it up after a while because they had other stuff to do. And now they're coming back because they're looking at it and going, no one has any clue what they're doing here. There's no transparency. There's no verifiability in any of what's going on in mining. And no one's paying it the slightest bit of attention. So Ocean does a whole bunch of things that the other pools are looking at us and other miners are looking at us going, wait a minute, really? Are you saying this is how it works? And we're saying, yep. And there's even a few things that we've uncovered that I just I'm genuinely wondering, hold on, this is going to blow up everything. I don't even know if I want to tell people this. Like, the design of ant miners is just astounding. You're spending up to 60 seconds in a 10-minute race doing useless work because of how badly they're designed. And people see an empty block and they go, oh, there must be something wrong with the pool. I say, no, there is not anything wrong with the pool. That is an ant miner that's unable to stop doing useless work. Like, every time the network finds a new block, every pool sends out new templates to all of the workers attached to their pool, which is tens, hundreds, millions, tens or hundreds of thousands, if not millions or tens of millions of individual workers or miners that all get updated with new work, and they just carry on doing the old work until they've cycled it out of their system. That because there's no mechanism by which you can say stop doing that work. That doesn't exist for Watts miners. A Watts miner within 1 to 3 seconds is on the new work, but they're less than 10% of the network. Nearly everyone is using Bitmain products or ant miners, and all of those ant miners are designed with every single corner cut possible. The multiple 0 days have been found in them. I don't like even running one on my local area network because I don't trust it at all. Anyway, I'm going off and off. Let's try and stick to something, eh? I'll
No,
try.
I think this is all interesting. I think just hearing the rants is actually very helpful. So you mentioned a couple of times spam and block templates. So I think one of the divergent areas I touched on a few minutes ago was block templates. Maybe now would be a good time to address what is a block template, who's defining it, and then you talked about blocking out spam in your block templates. What does that mean?
Yeah, a block template is just a candidate for what the next block would be. So it includes the prior block, and that's why they're all chained together in the blockchain. It includes Merkle trees of transactions that that the miner or the template constructor wants to add into the blockchain. So the sort of lazy expectation around what would happen with each block template is you run a Bitcoin node, you source and you source all of the unconfirmed transactions floating around in various mempools, and you start from the top. You find the most lucrative, and then you find the second most lucrative and the third most lucrative, and you use the limited amount of block space you have as imposed by nodes, because Bitcoin block space, the blocks can only be so big, and you use the space most efficiently using a greedy algorithm, and that's it. That's how you construct a template. In reality, though, you don't need to only source your transactions from mempools and the P2P layer of Bitcoin. You can also go out of band, or you can also just put your own transactions in block templates. So if you're a miner and you want to close a Lightning channel, or do a massive consolidation where you put hundreds of UTXOs into one new UTXO, that uses a lot of block space, right? You can just put that transaction in your template, pay 0 sats per byte, or pay whatever you like, because that money is ultimately coming back to you if you're the one that finds the block. Probably you'll put 0 sats per byte just in case your block gets orphaned and the transaction backslides back into the network and some other miner grabs it. Probably not worth going into that, but yeah, that's what a template is. That's what the construction of it entails. There's sort of lazy assumptions around it. You have pools run accelerators now. So if you do a transaction just as a normal user that doesn't have a lot of, didn't pay a high enough fee and generally isn't getting selected by the mining pools because there's more lucrative transactions out there, accelerators are out of band services where you can pay via some other process like credit card or maybe a Lightning payment saying, hey, can you miners, I will give you this much money if you put it in the next block. That's an accelerator. Those exist now. Mempool.space has one. Via BTC has one. Antpool have one. And this is how there was recently a massive bombshell dropped where we discovered that the Antpool's accelerator will it leaves a footprint. You can tell when templates are being constructed in order to satisfy the customers of that accelerator. And it turned out that a whole bunch of smaller pools were using the same templates that had transactions that had been accelerated that way, which means, holy shit, all of these alternative competing pools are all making the same templates or just using the same template as AntPool, which means not only is Bitmain lending them money so that they can continue during periods of bad luck to be FPPS pools, not only are they all using the same Coinbase custodian when they get paid out, they are also all constructing identical block templates too, apart from where the payout goes, but ultimately that's the same custodian. So you have a bunch of tiny pools out there that are looking like the competition to the big guy, but they're bankrolled by the big guy, and they are making blocks that they are told in a fashion that they are just making their miners that are attached to their pool mine Antminer blocks, mine Bitmain blocks. So, I mean, this is incredibly concerning. Like, we're talking about templates here, and I don't think they thought anyone would really check, but we realized Brains, which is its own pool, is just basically a subset of AntPool at this point. And that gives an illusion because everyone's scared of any one pool getting too large on the network. But if the smaller pools are just a part of the bigger pool, it provides us with an illusion of decentralization that we don't really have. That's just horrible. And it's being done cynically because obviously AntPool don't want to get too big and scare everyone because they'll lose a lot of hash rate, and the price of Bitcoin would probably drop as people lose confidence in its decentralization and its resilience. So they're incentivized to keep up appearances by saying, hey, small pools, do what we say. We'll lend you money, but you need to construct templates that we tell you to construct. And we need you to do it in a certain way. And as a result of that, you basically have a more the appearance of greater decentralization without actually the reality of it. So that just is horrifying to me because it shows that Bitcoin is, if they're not paying attention, they are looking for the appearance of decentralization. They're not looking for decentralization. Like the fact that a pool would do something like that, would say, hey, I know if my pool gets too big, everyone will leave. So I'm going to make it look like we're smaller than we really are. That's just so cynical. And the fact that people fell for it or are falling for it currently, that's just really depressing. Like it's come out multiple times. Like there were two bombshells. The first, this was shout out to Mononaut from mempool.space, and someone else did even better research. I can't remember the guy's name. It's like a RAM memory address on Twitter. It's like OX something or other, like one of those things you could never say. But yeah, the first bombshell was, holy shit, 10 pools are using the same custodian, Kobo. That's not good. They're all one entity. Then the next one was, holy shit, 10 pools are all constructing the same blocks. So really, what we thought was 10 pools is actually just one pool in effect. Not to mention all the hardware being pointed at these is all mained by the same guy running the biggest parent pool in that scenario. And not to mention that the payout mechanism, FPPS, is only sustainable for the smaller 9 pools because it's all bankrolled by the parent pool. So you basically have Bitmain running the show in Bitcoin again. They make all the hardware. They're running more than half of the pool stuff as well. So that's just beyond centralized. Like there's nothing credibly good about that. That is shitcoin level embarrassment. And we don't get to have a superiority complex and go, there's Bitcoin and shitcoin. They're the same at that point. There's no real difference there apart from like a sort of cultural, like we have more Austrian economics people in this part of the crypto. Like that's not good enough.
So what is describe how Ocean then is how you go about constructing block templates, to what extent you maybe put that in the hands of the miners themselves, and the implications of that. Like if everyone started pointing to Ocean, is there something about the way that you're structured that creates more decentralization, even if you had 100% of hash rate pointed at you?
Well, so first off, we pay out our miners in the Coinbase. So as I said earlier, when miners, when pools are constructing templates, they always just pay the pool itself in the reward. And those are virgin bitcoins. They have no input. They're the magical transaction in a block where the coins don't come from anywhere. They're the coin, the newly created coins miners are allowed to create for themselves as a result of mining a block. And in that contains transaction fee revenue as well. So in no cases, apart from like rare exceptions, like if P2Pool finds a block, which is like once every 5 years or something, in no other cases do you have a mining pool that says, hey, you are our 16 biggest miners. All of you are going to get your split in the actual structure of the block template itself. So we never take possession of that. And because we start at the top down, that means around 90% of the newly created coins that come into the network via Ocean never touch our fingers, ever. That's not true in any other case. So the fact that you have around, let's say, 5 or 6 credible other pools out there, that means 5 or 6 other people get, they are the new custodians of all newly generated Bitcoins ever come in. The fact that Ocean comes in and adds another 16 or so because it sends directly to miners means we've decentralized the custody, or the control rather, of all newly created coins. We've way more than doubled it. So that's a massive element of decentralization. Who owns the newly generated coins? Into whose hands do they go? Ocean massively decentralized that just by virtue of the way we construct our templates. The next is we have more than one template available to miners. This is a stopgap solution because we are creating a mechanism whereby miners make templates locally and they just ask the pool for the reward split. This is way superior to something like Stratum V2, which does. I'm not going to start attacking SV2 because I need to know more about our own solution first, but it's whatever. Like, miners that point at Ocean have a choice to make. What template do I use? And this basically comes down to how much arbitrary data do I want to allow in blocks or not. So Ocean, like, the whole point of mempool policy is that there's some variance in it in the first place. If everyone's using the same exact default structure provided for them by Bitcoin Core, then pretty much all blocks are going to look identical anyway. It kind of defeats the point of decentralizing the template constructing process in the first place. So Luke, who is a founder of Ocean and the, you know, wrote the original mining pool software and ran Ocean V1, which was Eligius, and, you know, the first mining pool operator, legendary status there for a very good reason, is also the maintainer of Bitcoin Knots, which is the number one alternative implementation of Bitcoin after Bitcoin Core. Obviously, Bitcoin Core is what most people use. Bitcoin Knots is basically Bitcoin Core with more user configurable stuff. It's not a ground up re-implementation like BTCD or something.
You have to be more technical to run that? Like, that is that?
No, it's just if you are, then you can do,
you can leverage it.
You're allowed to do more with it, but it's not any more difficult. It just has different defaults and it makes some things user configurable that aren't user configurable in Core. But it also has older defaults. Like, the op return thing is the main thing I'm remarking on here, because op return was basically a compromise that said, stop storing arbitrary data in Bitcoin, but if you're going to do it, we will provide a mechanism that doesn't do as much harm as anything else, because we can make it provably prunable. Op return outputs are provably unspendable. So if you want to stick arbitrary data in them, we can prune it off our nodes without ever worrying about having an incomplete UTXO set. So op return came into existence off the back of that rationale, which is, you know, like, people are going to do bad things. Let's give them the best way to do the bad thing so that it causes the least amount of harm. And there was some debate around how much of that should be allowed by default. And Knots has the old default. Core has since become more permissive. You know, the late Samurai wallet was just above Knots's default, but within Core's. So when Ocean came out, some of the stuff Samurai did wasn't allowed in our default template because Knots hasn't touched the size of permitted op returns by default since 2014, which is before Samurai was even a thing. So yeah, their transactions, the pre-commits for their coin joins didn't make it into our template. But we have other templates. So at the time, there were three templates. This was before we brought out the fourth one we did like a month ago. And two of those templates had the default size of 83 bytes, the core default. And that would let, you know, that would be exactly the same as core with regard to how much data could fit in op return. Anyway, I digress. The whole point of this thing is miners get to decide if they point at ocean, what do I want the blocks I mine to look like? And there are different options, and there's templates. I mean, there's visual templates showing you this is roughly what you can expect. Like every few seconds, the templates update while more stuff enters the mempool and other blocks get found. But we just say this is what it looks like right now. And these are the mempool policies, and you can implement them on your own node and verify that you're getting roughly the same blocks as what you might expect for if Ocean were to find a block right this second. And that's a choice, right? That's rather than this is in stark contrast to what pools have sort of grown comfortable doing, which is we do whatever we like with the block template, and you have no way of knowing what that is until the block is solved and shows up in the network. And then you get to know what it is your work was contributing to. Now that's crazy because you're the one doing the work. You should at least know what it is you're working towards. And the analogy or the visual metaphor we came up with it was blind, well, slaves working on building pyramids or whoever you believe built the pyramids. If there's some sort of ancient culture that's, you know, where there's some tyrannical emperor or pharaoh or something like that using slave labor to construct something, they're simultaneously blinding the slaves. They're putting blindfolds on them and saying, it's not in your interest or ours to let you know what it is you're actually working towards. You will just do the work we tell you. So miners to that effect were suitably offended when they jumped on Ocean and said, when Luxor mined a block that was just a JPEG, we didn't want that to happen and we had no idea we were hashing to that effect. This is not transparent, and it's our right to know that. I don't want to contribute work to malicious blocks, and I don't want to only find out that I'm doing so because the block was solved. So this is the difference with Ocean. The people that were upset about the filtration and the spam policies we did have knew about it beforehand because our templates are up there saying, hey, if we find a block right now, this is what it will look like. So the controversy started from people saying, hey, what an ocean block is going to look like this. So it's that double-edged sword of transparency. We said, this is what our blocks will look like. And you can withdraw your hash rate now if you don't want to see that in the blockchain. The fact that that would be more controversial than saying, we'll hide it and we'll throw a block at you that you might not have liked and you'll have contributed work to it. And now it's actually solved. Like again, this is it's very peculiar to me that people get the more transparent you are, the more people pick holes in what it is you're doing. Whereas if you hide everything, keep it all closed source, then people generally tend to just cope and ignore, I find. Sort of it's a bitter irony that, but yeah, the more transparent you are, the more scrutiny you invite. And like this is why it kind of makes me laugh. Like Antpool finds empty blocks all the time, and there's never anything. Ocean found one last night, and I wake up to a billion people screaming at me saying, Ocean's broken because it found an empty block. And I'm saying, everyone finds empty blocks because it's part of how mining works. Why is it only a problem when Ocean finds it? Maybe it's because I'm closer to it. Maybe I'm being like anecdotal in my perspective here, but I never see anyone complaining about any of the things they complain about with Ocean. And we're 0.2% of the network. We're absolutely tiny, and people like all day I have to deal with fake drama and controversy, and it just makes me think someone really wants us to die because we're blowing the whistle on the whole mining ecosystem. We brought transparency to it, we're decentralizing it, and we're undermining the FPPS scam. And I don't think any of the big guys are happy about it. So like I don't know. Again, what was the original question you asked here?
Well, so I think we're transitioning into it. So one of the dragons you're slaying is the FPPS model. The other, though, is it's I as I understand it, is through your block templates or through some of the templates that you have, like the out of the box templates, are what you refer to as spam. So that's another dragon you're slaying, and I assume when you say spam, you're talking the ordinals, inscription, JPEGs. The is that sort of your loose definition of spam? How are you defining that?
Hey, just a quick break and we'll get back to the show. But I want to introduce you to our very first sponsor of the Bitcoin Way podcast, Satoshi Coffee Company. Satoshi Coffee, sats.coffee is the URL. They make high quality, fresh roasted coffee, and they even put the block number to show proof of work on each bag. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see that. I'm not a coffee snob, but I'm sort of picky about what I do enjoy. And this Satoshi blend, which is one of their more popular blends, is incredible. They also have a blend from El Salvador and a couple of others. I'd highly recommend you trying out all of them. But the cool thing about Satoshi Coffee Company is they are Bitcoin only and only accept Bitcoin as payment. And as a Bitcoin Way podcast listener, you get 6.9% off if you go to sats.coffee and enter code TBW69. Again, Satoshi Coffee Company, sats.coffee. Check them out. Support Bitcoin only companies like Satoshi Coffee Company.
Spam is just arbitrary data stored in Bitcoin that isn't anything to do with genuine transactions. That's all. So, I mean, op return data is all spam. Like, there's spam that no one would even care about, including like open timestamps. Like, no one even there's no initiative to stop putting that inside Bitcoin because it's efficient. It's not egregious. It's not like, hey, 90,000 nodes. I want you all to store this JPEG, not even a hash of the JPEG, like the full JPEG. I want you to store it for the rest of time. Like, that's just asshole behavior. Like, that really is just like, in a visual world, it really is just like someone walking up to like the Sagrada de Familia in Barcelona, like the most beautiful building ever, and just like scrawling graffiti all over it. It's just obviously intuitively gross to do something like that. But there's also the technical level of it, which is, runes is one of the spammy protocols. They end up in the default ocean template mostly because they use a small amount of op return. And killing op return is like that's a genuine conversation that needs to happen. But that's a far cry from bug exploitation, which is what the inscriptions and ordinal stuff is doing, where they're literally taking a bug and an exploit. And then using that to trick nodes into thinking they're downloading a bunch of necessary script data that you takes advantage of the witness field that gets a 4x discount versus what other regular users are doing, and tricking nodes into storing this stuff. That's genuinely an exploit. And that's not, yes, it's spam, but it's also bug abuse. That's why it was a no-brainer for us to fix it. That's all. Because you literally have. I used this analogy before on Once Bitten podcast, and I really like it, so I'm trying to use it again. You have basically a front door saying this is where transactions come in, and you have a cat flap that says, and you can store some arbitrary data too, and we're going to be very particular about the size of that cat flap. And then you have a wrecking ball come in and smash the side out of your living room, and everyone starts coming in that way. But you maintain this carefully defined cat flap with a certain amount of size, and you say, well, it's very important that that be 83 bytes instead of 42 bytes. And like other people are tapping on the shoulder saying, there's a massive hole in the side wall of this house where elephants are walking in. Like, why do we care about the cat flap? Why is that there at this point? Like, we've said we will allow cats in, but not dogs. That's why we've like turned that cat flap to exactly that size. And we're still debating this. Why do we even have that if there's elephants walking in the side of the door? Like, obviously, there's something broken in our design, right? And the core developers all just went, there's nothing we can really do about it. Like, people are using it. They're going to use it. Someone makes a bit of money every elephant that walks in, even though it's a pain in the ass having a bunch of elephants in our house. Like, there's like, we're just going to allow it. There's no obvious fix for it. And I'm saying, but the cat flap doesn't make any sense anymore. Why do we have the cat flap? Like, get rid of it or close the hole in the wall over there so that they're forced to use the cat flap, but don't have both. It doesn't make any sense. It's incoherent. Why do we have a data carrier size limit anymore that controls exquisitely how large that cat flap is if you're going to have a massive hole in the wall that everyone just roots around? So that was it. Like, the inscriptions and the ordinal stuff and BRC20. All that just used the hole in the wall. It went, screw the data carrier size limit, screw the policy. We'll just get around it because no one's paying attention right now. Like, people are too busy engaging in sort of philosophical whataboutism and talking about censorship and all that to realize, holy shit, there's like a massive bug in Bitcoin that's being exploited. We need to fix this. Like, people just fell over themselves and got tripped up on the ideology of it and realized this is just broken here. And then there's the other analogy I used, which is like, you want people to be free to drive where they want to drive, and you build roads to that effect, and you want freedom. You can't take it to the absurd extreme of saying the road is, there's an issue with the sewage system in this town, and the roads are all flooded and 3 feet high in water, and people have started sailing boats down the road. Now you can't drive on them at all. That's not freedom anymore. That's just bad design, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so now you have, the blockchain is full with crap that's very expensive for nodes to process, that is a bastardization of Bitcoin's use case. That's not freedom. That's just design failure. And trying to make the stuff work properly is not censorship or undermining of Bitcoin's reason to exist. It's literally just engineers trying to build a functional system. There is no targeting of specific people or anything, and there's nothing being done at the behest of a government. And there's not even any slippery slope or precedent set by it, because we've had spam filters forever. Like, we've had a strict control on the amount of arbitrary data that's permitted, with the assumption that if you want to go around that, it's going to be way more expensive. Like, if you want to start storing data inside fake public keys, or even if you want to use up return, it's at least expensive. Giving them all the witness discount, like, it's cheaper for them to go through the hole in the wall as an elephant than it is to use the cat flap, because of the way the witness discount works. This is all just complete, like, this is an accident. It's lamentable. And it just means Bitcoin's in a really bad state, and it needs fixing. So we, you know, so all that, back to the templates and the way Ocean designed it, all we did was fix that bug. We said, look, if you're going to use the hole in the wall, understand that the hole in the wall is now also managed by the same variable that controls the size of the cat flap. So you can go through the cat flap, or you can go through the hole in the wall. But if the node has data carrier size equals 42, which is default in knots, or data carrier size equals 83, which is default in core, that's how big the cat flap will be, and the other hole in the wall. So pick, because it's the same. You're going to pay the same either way. Now, there's also data carrier cost, which you can say, all right, for some reason, this one, although it's the same size, the hole in the wall rather than the cat flap, it's also cheaper, unfortunately, than the cat flap. So we make that more expensive. Now, there's some sort of race to the bottom environment there, where other pools copying us would still incentivize people using the fixed hole in the wall rather than the cat flap, because it's cheaper, because it uses more witness it puts its data in the witness field rather than not return. But nonetheless, it's a start, and it's an attempt to make Bitcoin coherent again. Otherwise, like, I'm actually more fine with getting rid of the cat flap and saying this didn't work than I am leaving it and, like, arguing about how big it should be when there's a massive elephant-sized hole in the wall.
Got it. Hey, are you okay on time? I know we're...
No, I'm good. I have another thing in about 55 minutes, so
okay. Well, yeah, we're good. We don't have to go that long, but I said a couple of questions that are off of this topic. So one is, I think recently you, and it'll have been a month and a half once this comes out, I think, but recently you had a hot take on the Samurai Wallet founders being arrested. And why don't you explain your hot take and why I think if I recall your tweet, you were sort of at odds with the consensus amongst most Bitcoin Twitter.
I am, because, like, to me, it's just about saying what's needed and isn't being said, rather than being at odds with everyone else. Like, I am somewhat at odds with everyone else nonetheless, but I don't think it really needs to be said. Like, what happened to them is wrong. They shouldn't be in the situation they're in right now. It's the idea that they are providing privacy to people that want to use Bitcoin in a private way. The idea that that's a bad thing, or that there's any justification for, punitive treatment by the authorities, that's not a valid moral framework at all. And I absolutely rebuke anyone that says they are. My take on it is, but I mean, the outpouring of sympathy for them and all that is everywhere. Like, I don't need to add to that. It's pointless. It goes without saying. It unfairly paints a target on my back that is pointless, What isn't being said, which is what I said, is privacy by design is what you want. Privacy by policy is fucking useless and just creates honeypots. Sorry for the bad language. The issue with this is it's Google's don't be evil. You want can't be evil. Like, I don't want you to have all my data, and then because you're an awesome guy, you're just not ever going to give that up. So Samurai now in a position where they have data they shouldn't have, that, and they're now going to be faced with forever in prison. Do they give up the data or do they not? The reason I've been recommending for years people don't use it is because there are other services out there that give you privacy, where if the founders all get arrested and have a gun held to their head, they don't have any data that they can give the authorities. It's much worse for the founders in that position because they don't have anything they can bargain with, but no trust is required. And Zelko is the guy that makes, he works on Ronin Dojo, which was the good way to use Samurai. And we had a long argument on Odell's podcast, and he kept saying to me over and over again, why wouldn't you trust Samurai? They've done so much for privacy. And I kept saying, because you shouldn't have to, and you don't have to. There are implementations of privacy preserving coin joins out there where you don't need to trust the coordinator with your extended public key. That is the creation of a honeypot. And if Samurai are spooks that created a honeypot, which I thought for a while, or they're just making a bad design, which is an accidental honeypot, which it looks like is the case now, either way, it amounts to the same thing for their users. If you mixed naively on Samurai, the entire history of your mixes can now be unwound because of the data on the Icelandic server that got seized. Now you're in shit. You're in a lot of trouble. So yes, the outpouring was generally for Samurai of sympathy, but I'm saying their users are the ones I actually feel bad for because they're the ones that now stand to have stuff they thought was private and probably used in a way that you would only use money if you thought it was actually private. That's now in the hands of the three-letter agencies. That's a disaster, and it's something I've been warning about for years. And to Zelko's point, why wouldn't you trust them? I'm saying, again, because I don't want to have to trust them. Even if they're the best people in the world, if they have a gun to their head saying, give up this data, I don't expect them to say, I will die for my users. I don't expect that. I don't expect people to make martyrs out of themselves. I expect them to design carefully designed products that don't ever mean that they'll end up in that position anyway. Like, hats off to them. If they refuse and they get longer sentences as a result, on the one hand, I respect the bravery. On the other hand, why did you design it that way in the first place? And why did you call everyone spooks for warning you about this situation? So there are plenty of people in the space, like people I don't agree with on the spam stuff at all, but Shinobi, Peter Todd, and Greg Maxwell, and Wasabi Wallet, all of these people and myself have sat there for years saying, hey, Samurai, your stuff is really badly designed in this respect. If you end up in this situation, it's going to suck for your users. And they would just call us spooks and idiots. And now they are in that situation. And I'm not saying I told you so because I'm happy about it. I'm saying your users are fucked now because you didn't listen to us. And this is annoying. It really is. Like, there's Join Market and there's Wasabi, except Wasabi's gone now. Mm-hmm. They will be gone on June the 1st. I think that's when they stop doing their central coordination. That's probably a read between the lines kind of situation where you can still use it. But everyone's running scared now. I'm hesitant to even talk about this stuff publicly because it's just, again, painting a target on your back. For years, there's always been serious privacy options from people that aren't LARPing as ninjas on Twitter and, you know, provoking the three. Like, if you fuck around, you will find out. Like, you can build privacy technology and you can do it in a very, very academic way, the way Adam Gibson does with Join Market. And you don't provoke people. You don't deliberately create problems for yourself. Maybe you don't jump on flights to the United States all that often, but you know, you can just do it academically and you can be careful. Like, my favorite example is always Bram Cohen, the inventor of BitTorrent. He lives a happy, normal life. He's not in jail. How much illegal stuff has he facilitated through the invention of what he's done? You know, like, so much that GCHQ even said, we can't even track all the BitTorrent stuff. Like, it's just too much for us to actually keep track of. Like, he's not in jail. He's fine because he doesn't sit there on Twitter, like, you know, without having built, like, if you build a decent product, people will leave you alone. If you build a shoddy product and market it as this is how Putin can buy a nuke and the FBI can't do anything. If you're going to start saying stuff like that on Twitter, like, and they come after you, that is kind of your own fault. Like, yeah. And it is, a lot of it is just the marketing of it will get you in trouble. Again, though, I reiterate, they shouldn't be in trouble with the authorities for what they did. It's totally irrational. It's immoral. And but I can't go, they've done nothing wrong. Like, their intentions were good, but their design is where it matters. I don't, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And that's like the truest trope when it comes to what's happened here. The samurai's good intentions have screwed all their users because they didn't build something good. They built something based off of an image of like cool, like cypherpunk privacy ninja tech. Like, in reality, it was just a crap design. And now everyone that fell for that marketing stuff is in trouble. Like, that's all I can really say about it. Like, that's my take on it. It's going to come across as harsh, but the point is, like, they are two guys in a lot of trouble, but their users are thousands or tens of thousands of people who are also in trouble. And I feel a lot worse for them because they paid for a product that they didn't get. They paid to get privacy and they don't have it. And having fake privacy is worse than no privacy for obvious reasons. If you think you're invisible, you might do something like pick your nose in public and everyone just saw you do it. Like, that's not safe. Like, you need to know you're public. If you're public, if you think you're private and you're not, I don't even want to know what you're using your Bitcoin for. And because it could get you in so much trouble because the laws and morality are not aligned. So you might use your money for something perfectly moral that is illegal. And now you're going to get caught doing that. And I'm sorry, you didn't do anything wrong. And if you used bad privacy techniques to get there, that's just horrific. That's a crying shame for everyone involved. And the fact that it cost you money as well to get that, that just adds insult to injury. If Samurai were running like a free service to get people's coins cleaned, that's different. But it's not. They were paid. They made a lot of money running these mixes, and they marketed it as something much more robust than it really is. And for me, it's like, I use VPN as an analogy. I'll round off the point with that, because if you use a VPN and you want to get around geo-blocking, like you want to watch a YouTube video that's banned in your country, so you turn on a VPN and then you can watch it, or you want to watch Hulu or Disney or something like that, and you have to set your VPN location to America or something like that to watch it, right, fine. But if someone's trying to tell you use a VPN and then you can go and buy, you know, heroin online or something like that, no freaking way. That is, you know, that the VPN is likely a honeypot. If that VPN is like advertising itself on every YouTube video in the world, like NordVPN or something like that, everyone's heard of NordVPN. The idea that that is not a honeypot, whether intentionally or not intentionally, is so naive that I cannot entertain anyone seriously with it. It's so, you can break on-chain heuristics with bad privacy tech like Samurai. You can make it so that someone just looking at the blockchain can't connect an input and output anymore without access to Samurai servers. Fair enough. But the idea that you're secure from three-letter agencies doing that is a joke. All you've done is paint a massive, giant, you know, red flag on that UTXO and have a specific history with it on a specific server in Iceland. That's all. You would have been better off doing nothing at all, and it would have been cheaper. So combine all that, it's just appalling. I find it appalling. I really do. What I'm most annoyed about is the fact that there was no maturity around it. I wish they'd have just turned around. Like, I wish they'd just turned around and said, you're right. Like, we need to stop exposing this sensitive data to us. We need to develop a mechanism that isn't hard to do at all. We need to use a protocol where users can engage in coin joins and we can coordinate everything without being able to connect the inputs and outputs on the server side, because that paints too much of a target on our back. We don't want the heat. And if we ever get compromised, if our server gets, you know, compromised, it won't matter for our users' perspective. They could have done that. It's not that technically challenging to understand the difference. Like, I'm pretty sure I've explained it well enough here. And if you're not going to do that or not even try, and you're just going to call everyone spooks that points it out for you, you're going to be a laughing stock. So they were every single person I know in Bitcoin, like without single exception, except Odell, was considered Samurai a laughingstock and said, don't go near it with a 10-foot pole. And so no one I know personally was hurt by this because no one I know uses Samurai. Friends don't let friends use Samurai. And yeah, I'll finish the point there. That's yeah. Basically my take on it.
So last sort of topical question, and this is, I'm going out on a limb here because I have done no research into this, don't know what it's about, but I saw something, I think you shared something about this digital ID thing that Michael Saylor is launching. Could you maybe just really quickly define what that is and then share your
opinion? Again, elephants going through the hole in the wall. Like I ran into Saylor at Madeira, the Bitcoin Atlantis conference. And increasingly over the last year, he's been talking more and more about, you know, bananas on the blockchain, which is this just like laughable concept of if you put stuff in the blockchain, it becomes true, which is just not right. Okay, the only thing you can do with arbitrary data inside Bitcoin's blockchain is prove that that data existed then and not after. Like, so if someone says, hey, I wrote this song and here it is in the blockchain at block height 900,000. If you can point to a hash of the same data in block 890,000, then you can say, no, I had it before then. That's it. That doesn't prove anything else, right? So if you upload your will and testament, which is one of the things he came up with, into Bitcoin's blockchain, it proves that someone uploaded something that looks like your last will and testament into the Bitcoin blockchain. It doesn't prove you were of sound mind. It doesn't prove that you owned any of the things in that will. It doesn't prove that there wasn't a legal document that existed elsewhere that didn't get uploaded into the blockchain before that supersedes it. In reality, all these sorts of forms of intellectual property and intention for what should happen with assets that aren't anything to do with Bitcoin itself, they all get enforced in real world. And the blockchain can maybe be used as an oracle in a way that maybe someone wouldn't deny, but it's no more effective than an email. So if I sell you a JPEG, I can email you saying, hey, this is your JPEG now. And that's the end of it. That's as effective as uploading any form of intellectual property into Bitcoin. Because at the end of the day, no one else cares. The blockchain does not enforce the ownership. It can't. And this is why it's so annoying that they will store all this stuff inside Bitcoin. There's other reasons they do it too, which are potentially more valid, but what Saylor was coming out with was just, hey, if I upload my will into Bitcoin's blockchain, that's somehow amazingly better than the mechanisms we have in place at the moment. And I'm saying, no, it isn't. It doesn't do anything. If Michael Saylor dies and there's a dispute about where his billions of dollars go, no one's going to say, he uploaded it into the blockchain. It's irrefutable. Of course, everyone will contest it. They'll say that wasn't really him uploading it. That's all. Yeah. Like, and or they'll say there's another one here, or they'll just, you know, they'll just, you still need a court to come along and say, all right, here's where the assets go. And we agree that what's in the blockchain is actually valid, which is just the same as an email. Like, you can literally just show the court an email where Michael Saylor emailed you saying, hey, I leave my $1 billion to my eldest son or something like that. The court still has to come along and say, all right, we consider that the thing. And that could, it doesn't matter whether it's in the blockchain or the email.
So Saylor's he's a smart guy, though.
Yep.
Do you think there's another reason for this? Or do you think he just is missing on, like, everything he just said makes a lot of sense. Like, This is all handled off the blockchain, like, you know, to your point. So, like, is he missing something and just didn't think it through? Or is there another reason he's doing this that maybe is not his marketing?
Look, there's a million people out there that will call him a spook and point out, like, MicroStrategy's office is like one block away from the NSA's headquarters or something like that. I'm not going to do that. I don't actually even think that. Like, I'm not doing that cowardly by saying that and saying I don't agree with it. I genuinely, maybe I'm naive, I don't tend to assume people are spooks. I just don't. I think in this case it's just ignorance. Like, I didn't even finish my train of thought there because I keep getting sidetracked. Sorry about the ADHD. I think it's with like I said, I ran into him in Madeira and I was like, I keep hearing you talking about bananas on the blockchain, right? Which is the bananas on the blockchain meme is like if I pick a banana in Guatemala and I write into the blockchain, Jose Rodriguez picked a banana in Costa Rica, and then I sent it to, you know, Nicaragua, and then the guy who gets it in Nicaragua writes in the blockchain, Jose Rodriguez sent me this from, you know, Nicaragua, and now it's in Guatemala. You know, just it's the idea that as the consumer, when you buy that product in New York or whatever, you can check the blockchain and go, wow, I know the entire history of this banana. It literally could have just been on a bit of paper as well, like, because you're still trusting that all of that really happened. It doesn't matter if the, like, they can also just say, and by the way, 2 + 2 = 5, and put that in the blockchain too. It doesn't mean any of it's true. It just means that someone wrote some stuff in the chain. So that was what I was coming at Sailor with. I'm like, have you not realized the Oracle problem, which is you can say stuff happened and put it in the blockchain. It doesn't mean it happened. It just means that you said stuff happened and put it in the blockchain, right? So that's what I was wanting to talk to him about. But it's very hard speaking to Sailor. He's always getting mobbed by like a million, you know, people that want to just are amazed by the guy, because he's genuinely a brilliant, genius man. He's a fantastic thinker. And he was a great advocate for Bitcoin for all of 2021. He was incredible. But I found myself taking exception more and more to the things he said. The first is sell everything you own and mortgage anything you can't bear to not own anymore and buy Bitcoin. That was a shitty piece of advice because he has access to 0% interest rates. No one else does, not in current environment. Don't borrow money to buy Bitcoin ever, because you're just going to have to sell it. And you don't want to sell your Bitcoin. Buy it responsibly. Don't. It's not a debt-based thing. Don't get yourself in over your head. And anyone that borrows money to buy Bitcoin can end up selling it at you know, the lowest low of the market, because that's when the interest rate is hurting them the most. That was bad. The mining council was bad too. Elon Musk freaks out about Bitcoin not being good for the environment. Tesla says, all right, we're not accepting Bitcoin anymore. And rather than say, well, screw you, you're an idiot, you haven't done a modicum of research, he said, all right, we'll bend over backwards. We'll prove we're green and energy efficient. And you can't give these ESG, these insincere Bitcoin haters an inch, because they'll take a mile. That was a mistake. You don't want to voluntarily self-report how green you are as a Bitcoin miner. You don't want to exist inside any sort of regulatory framework of that nature at all, because it leads to censorship. It leads to centralization. If you do that and you end up in a situation where governments are saying, all right, you're the green miners, we'll give you a tax break. Great. That means you can't be a cypherpunk miner anymore, because you need basically a mining license, so you're economic disadvantage. So that was wrong. But then, yeah, the arbitrary data stuff he started talking about, I'm like, all right, this guy is doing, I thought he had skipped some of the process that people normally go down, which is Bitcoin's amazing. Let's do everything on the blockchain. Like, we can create verifiability. Let's do voting on the blockchain. Let's do, you know, tracking consumer goods on the blockchain. Like I gave with the banana example. If you're going to do all this stuff, you have to realize the Oracle problem. Like, someone's got to ultimately dictate who decides what banana that was, who decides whether any of this history is true or not. And if we accept that there is an entity doing that, why don't we just trust them for all of it? Like, adding the history into the blockchain, it adds an illusion of reliability and what's immutability to the version of events, but it's still not reliable. You still need someone to say, yeah, it was that banana, and yeah, that guy really did pick it. Like, that's, and then you're back to just everything else. So yeah, I'm trying to explain this. So I said, all right, I'm hearing about arbitrary data stuff, you know, I'm working for Ocean. And he was like, great, like a really good product, and like, you guys are doing a great thing, like very supportive and informative there. And he was telling me, you know, this is a couple of months ago, about the decentralized identities on Bitcoin and talking about how that would work. And I was like, okay, I think I know where you're going with this. Are you going to use op return, which is the cat flap, or are you going to use the hole in the side of the wall, which is the elephant, which is basically a glaring wound in Bitcoin's design right now that is an embarrassment to anyone that knows how to read a line of code. Please tell me you're not using the hole in the wall, because you can't treat nodes as unpaid cloud storage. If you do that, there just won't be nodes, and then we'll just be a shitcoin. Like, and he's and I didn't get to elaborate on that, but he said he didn't know the implementation. He said, look, I don't know whether we're using op return or not. Like, this is a detail I'm not privy to, or I don't know right now, or we're not sure about. And I left it, right? Because I'm like, okay, cool. All right. And then he just told me all about the idea. But since he released it, it's become very clear they're using the exact same elephant in the wall inscription exploit to just store piles and piles of garbage data that could all just be a hash. And the minute it's a hash, you can use the cat flap because hashes are tiny. Not just core's default of 83 bytes, Nonce's default of 42 is enough to store a hash and then some. So Nick Szabo, maybe if we're going to round off this as well, I'll round it off. Nick Szabo said years ago, don't store data in Bitcoin's blockchain, store hashes of the data. And a hash of the data, because you can hash a last will and testament and put it in the blockchain rather than the whole thing. It's actually 100% as good, because you're always going to need to testify as to the fact that that was actually something you did. And that being the case means you can always maintain the ability to decrypt it from the hashed version into the actual data. And anyone can prove that that will hashes into that data that's in the blockchain. It's exponentially more efficient use of the blockchain. It's what the things do that we don't really call spam, the things that aren't to do with Bitcoin. They're just arbitrary data, but no one really minds them. So that's things like open timestamps, because they're not being inefficient deliberately, and they can all fit inside op return. And that was the compromise we made, and we're basically fine with that. So when it became clear that Sailor wasn't going to do that, they're going to upload the entire thing inside, we're saying, look, you can do a hash of a million people can sign up for some sort of decentralized identity scheme and have a whole social network to that effect. You can Merkleize the entire thing into one hash and then put it in one op return. If you do that, I don't really mind. But if you want to store every single change of state of your identity system and keep all of the raw identities in the Bitcoin blockchain and fill up blocks with this stuff, Bitcoin isn't going to survive that, because no one will be able to outcompete you to open a Lightning channel. You just can't. You're going to open up the road to boats sailing down it by flooding it with water, there won't be any cars anymore. And if you don't have cars, who's going to build new roads? No one. That's the problem. If you corrupt a system's purpose and undermine it to that point, it's over. If you don't have nodes because people aren't doing financial transactions anymore because they can't find it, you don't have Bitcoin anymore. You don't have 21 million. You don't have miners burning kilowatts, megawatts of electricity to find a single block to satisfy the requirements of 25 nodes. No one's going to do that. Like, the only reason I will burn megawatts of electricity to find a block is because, not right now, please.
You're good.
Thanks. All right. Thank you. The only reason you will consume that much electricity to do something like that is to satisfy the requirements of tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of nodes. If those guys aren't there, holding up the hoop saying, hey, jump through this, we make all of you jump through this. It's just like, I guess my analogy is like immigration again. It's like if America says, hey, you want to immigrate to our country, it will cost you $500,000 and you have to start a business and you have to get an HIV test and you have to engage in a multi-year long process. I accept that, right? Because it's America. If you have a country with three people in it that, you're like Timmy from next door started because he was like 10 years old and he was playing a game. And he's like, if you want to become a member of my country and I set the same level of hoops, I could be like, well, I'm obviously not going to go to that effort. This is just a bit of fun and a bit of pretense. So if you have a couple of nodes saying, hey, you've got to consume a gigawatt of electricity to mine a block, people are going to go, no, I'm not going to do that, because like the rules can be changed in 5 minutes. It's a 10-year-old boy's imagination. It's not a massive institution with that same amount of work provided to it. So this is the mechanism, basically, to round off everything here, I hope, in some sort of hopefully, elegant way. It's if you start undermining the way in which the ecosystem relates to itself internally by introducing all these external things, that like all this, arbitrary data storage and decentralized identity, if you start using Bitcoin for all that stuff, it doesn't remain Bitcoin for very long, because it breaks down the fabric and the cohesion of the whole project. So, I mean, I don't think I've explained it better on any other pod. So hopefully yeah, hopefully I can use this once you release this thing. I can say, right, I think I've actually finally explained it properly. Like, I had the right amount of caffeine.
That's right. No, I love it. Yeah, the way I've been thinking about a lot of this stuff is just like, Satoshi gave us this big, beautiful park. And for like the last so many years, we've been adding feature, you know, water features and a little pond over here and a gazebo. And then like all of a sudden, some like naked guys with bagpipes showed up and like started, you know, blaring, you know, in the middle of the night. It's like, that wasn't really what the park was for, you know? And I know it's more nuanced and complicated than that, but it, like, that's kind of the concern that I, you know, I feel.
Yeah, it's an intuitively obvious thing. Like, if it was in meat space, and everyone keeps using the shitting in the pool analogy. That's what, like there's a public pool, there's kids in it, and a wizard comes along and starts crapping in the pool. And, like, some people that read that on paper, like, that look at it, you know, in the abstract, go, well, isn't that a remarkable aspect of freedom that someone could come along and use it for something it wasn't designed for? Like, you can look at it that way if you want, or you can look at it like any sane human adult being and go, that's, what are you doing? Like, this is not what it's for, and you've made it unusable for the purpose it's for. And if you keep doing it, we won't have pools anymore, because no one is going to pay for the construction of a pool in an environment where they know if they do, it's going to be filled with human excrement. Like, there's no reason to do that. You know, you won't have any customers, and you know that no one would ever, you know, as an investor, you know that it's a waste of time investing in some new construction project. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a completely valid analogy. So, like, at the end of the day, miners are the service providers. They meet the requirements imposed on them by the nodes, and it's not on them to find loopholes in that and go, hey, screw you. Like, we're going to fill up the chain with garbage, even though you don't want this stuff. If you do that, you're biting the hand that feeds you, and we all basically just, you know, it's just like you're falling off the edge of a cliff, and you make sure you hold your friend's hand before you do, so you pull them off too, and we all just end up splat on the ground and dead. And that was always the default for Bitcoin anyway. It's not magic. Like, you need its users to not actively attack it. It doesn't magically suddenly fix itself and get stronger. If you have miners getting paid money to sabotage the project and everyone goes, oh, that's a good thing, like, well, it doesn't, it's not a good thing. It's just over. Like, so Mr. Michael Saylor, I'm saying, if you treat nodes as unpaid cloud storage, where there's a security guard at the front of the building who lets you in if you give him a bribe, like, that's no good. Like, the nodes are going to get annoyed with that. The nodes are going to refuse to run. And hold on, here's what I should have mentioned, like, a long time ago. I'm at 95 hours now on my Raspberry Pi trying to do the initial block download. I'm in the middle of April 2024, so I'm finally nearing the end of it. The minute I hit 2023, which is when all the UTXO bloat started, it slowed to a crawl. I could get through the entire process of syncing a Bitcoin node in 2022 on a Raspberry Pi 4, which is 50% as powerful as the hardware I'm running here, in under 48 hours. I got to that same point in the process on my Raspberry Pi 5, which is twice as powerful, in 12 hours, which is amazing, right? That's how much the technology has improved. But even though the technology has improved that much, it's taken me another 83 hours to get through just last year. That's how bad the attack is on the network right now. And that's technology that is 4 years in the making. Raspberry Pi 4 to Raspberry Pi 5 took 4 years for us to get that technological advancement and for us to get a 50% improvement that didn't in any way touch the sides of how big and unwieldy the UTXO set has become. This is an attack. Every year it's going to get that much worse, and it's going to take multiple years for us to get technology that can't even keep up with how bad it is per year. So it took 4 years to get something that couldn't even outpace what happened to the blockchain in 1 year. So the idea that technology is improving, we can handle all this bloat, and it's going to save us, is demonstrably false. And I've rigged you can see it behind me. That's the Raspberry Pi 5 there. There's an air filter on, blowing cold air at it the whole time. I've got a heat sink on it. I've tried two different drives. And most importantly of all, I've rigged it it doesn't even connect to the Bitcoin network. It connects directly to my laptop node. So I've taken all of the peers out of the equation. There's not like a bad peer on the network that's serving me blocks slowly and making me do it really slowly. There's no Tor. There's none of that stuff. It's as fast as it can possibly be using gigabit Ethernet. I've rigged it. This whole thing should have been, if Bitcoin had carried on the way it was prior to 2023, I would have done this whole process in about 20 hours. Now it's going to take over 100. That's not sustainable. That means a year from now, we'll be at 200, 300 hours. And then a slight technological improvement will mean instead of 300 hours, we're at 280. Like, do you see how fast it's running away from us?
Yeah.
So like that's, in that environment, you just end up with a very complicated Bitcoin with no nodes. And that is Ethereum. That's why Ethereum's shit and why Bitcoin isn't. And Bitcoin's turning into shitcoins because of people shitcoining on Bitcoin. It's very obvious. And it should be undeniable at this point. And everyone should be worried about it. And everyone should be trying to improve it. The elephant-sized hole in the wall isn't without consequence. It's a massive issue. And we need to fix it. And it's just as simple as that. There can be no room for doubt at this point.
Yeah, no, I think that's an important message for everyone to hear. So before we hop off, I do want to get your thoughts, just any predictions, price, otherwise, over the next 12 to 18 months, besides more spam hitting the network.
I think, I don't know, cynically, the history of Bitcoin's price has been when it's at its most dangerous. Like in 2023, we had an accidental hard fork. In 2017, the whole system nearly completely collapsed. There was a civil war, you know. We were playing a game of chicken to get SegWit in. Miners were openly attacking the network again. But in both environments, those were bull markets. So people that want to talk about rational behavior of markets is just of informed consumers are living in. I wish I was that naive. Like generally, Bitcoin's price pumps when the people that know what's going on with it are tearing their hair out, going, this is all completely going to collapse. I don't know why that is. It just seems to be a coincidence. You know what it is? I think it's actually just, in this case anyway, during bull markets, nonsense comes around and nonsense is harmful. And but it's a bull market, right? So everyone's trying to get money. Everyone's trying to get their slice of the pie. In a bear market, all of this idiocy disappears. Like no one is pumping cat JPEGs on Bitcoin when the price is down 50% and, you know, still falling. So I think it's indicative of a bull market. We will shrug it off. Unfortunately, it's, I mean, actually, I take that back. I'm not sure we can shrug this one off, actually, because the awareness around it is that bad. And there are enough Bitcoiners that I've looked up to for years that seem intent on just pretending there are no problems. And for me, this full node experiment I'm doing here is just absolute proof. Like we are losing an entire class of low-end hardware. If we do that, it's over for decentralized validation of what happens. And at that point, you just end up with miners in control of the network, and mining is completely centralized, as I've pointed out. So predictions are Bitcoin trends towards centralization and people continue to not pay attention, but the price carries on flying up anyway. And the analogy is either boiling frogs, which is like a awful psychological phenomenon where people don't realize how bad the situation has gotten because it got there gradually rather than by the flick of a switch. Or Wile E. Coyote running off the edge of a cliff and not looking down yet. Those are my two visual metaphors for what's happening with Bitcoin. It's completely centralized. It's wide open to censorship. There is no validation of what's going on in a decentralized way. And we're still running anyway off the edge of the cliff and no one's looked down yet. Like those are my two scenarios. But here's the weird part is I'm the only guy, or I'm one of the few people that thinks Bitcoin's really messed up that doesn't have a shitcoin to sell you. I'm not selling, even though I think it's that broken, because there's nothing else even remotely as good. So like people message me like, hey, when are you going to sell? And I'm like, I'm not going to sell because there's nothing else, anything like as good as Bitcoin. It's just going to be nowhere near as good as it could have been. So keep your Bitcoin, but fight for it to be as good as it can be. Don't sell it. There's no shitcoin that's anything like as good. The dollar's no good. The real estate's no good. Precious metals are no good. It's just don't be naive about the health of the network, I think is what I would say. The price will carry on going up. There'll be another crash. The price will go up again. But at this rate, eventually the whole system does come tumbling down. But I don't know where I would tell you to park your wealth if it wasn't Bitcoin. I honestly don't know. I think put as much money in Bitcoin as you can and then educate yourself and fight for what needs to be done. And lastly, nothing speaks like hash rate. If you care about what ends up in the blockchain and you care about the centralization of mining, you can write all the tweets you want. Nothing really speaks like having actual hash rate. Like, proof of work can't be faked. Like, you can spin up Twitter bots and start campaigning for some sort of nonsense, but there's no proof of work in that. You could be 10 very high level accounts with people with long established history and reputations in the space. That is proof of work. Or you could just be random bots, right? Like, you can spot the difference, but there's work involved in that. Whereas you can't mine fake blocks, you can't do fake proof of work. So every single petahash that is pointed at Ocean is real. That's people that are doing real work, and they are saying what it is they want the blockchain to look like. And they are explicitly stating that. And fortunately, they make more money than anyone else. So it's like, that's the ultimate beauty of the whole thing. If you can ignore the FUD and you can do your own analysis, you can mine with Ocean and you can make more money doing something which is actually good for the long-term health of the network. Every reason to do it. So come mine with Ocean. A lot of people who mine with us that have never mined before. So that's great. And that's a real heartwarming feeling. Like, there are people that are just in Europe paying like $1 billion a kilowatt hour. Like, I know, I used to live there. So yeah, nothing speaks like hash rate. That's it.
Terrific. Proof of work, mine with Ocean. It's a good way to end it, man. Hey, so tell everyone where they can find you online, how to hook up with Ocean, any sort of handoff you've got.
Yeah, sure. You can mine with Ocean more easily than any other pool because it doesn't require that you create an account. It's permissionless. This did mean we had a high threshold for a while, but now we have Lightning. So we just found a block last night and everyone's Lightning payouts have gone out already, even though the coins aren't even mature yet. You have to wait 100 blocks before you can move newly mined coins. A little known Easter egg of Bitcoin that no one knows because pools deal with all the newly mined coins, but not Ocean, right? So yeah, mine with Ocean. You'll earn more money. I feel confident saying that at this point. I was incredulous for a long time about how that could really be true, but it is. Our miners are repeatedly telling us that they've made far more with Ocean than they did with the same hash rate pointed at other pools, running rigorous scientific experiments there. So that's at Ocean. Well, that's just ocean.xyz or at ocean_mining on Twitter. Me personally, I'm at grass-fed Bitcoin on Twitter. And I'm called Bitcoin Mechanic. I have a YouTube channel too, but I don't tend to upload much to it when I'm busy, you know, working for whatever company I'm working for. And we're also affiliated with Start9 as well, where I used to work. They make the best node in a box plug and play thing that there is. We officially recommend that. Ocean does. We have a link where you can buy Start9 products and you get 5% off. And that's the easiest way to run Bitcoin nodes and Lightning nodes. And, you know, we don't want to accept the notion that no one will ever run nodes. But if we want to fight that battle, we need to make it very easy for people to run nodes and offer great customer support around it. So that's what Start9 do. That's what Ocean pushes people to do. And this is how you bring sovereignty back to Bitcoin. You fight these battles.
Awesome. Mechanic, thank you so much for your time, man. This has been a lot of fun. Important words of wisdom. I hope we can get this message out to a lot of people. And I know you just continue making the podcast circuit. Keep spreading the word, man.
Cool. Thanks so much for having me, mate.
All right. Cheers. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Bitcoin Mechanic has quickly become one of my very favorite Bitcoiners. Up there on the Mount Rushmore for me personally. Again, I love what he's talking about. I think this is all, we need to be defensive in our posture about Bitcoin. What are the ways that it could be attacked or could be its impact diminished? And I think he's talking about a lot of these things that we need to all consider. So if you agree with him, if you think what he said makes sense, do what you can to support Ocean. Maybe consider pointing a miner their way if you've got one or are thinking about doing so. And then check out his X, Twitter, and check out Ocean Mining in general. And of course, if you need self-custody help with your Bitcoin, check out The Bitcoin Way. We're at thebitcoinway.com or on X at thebitcoinway_. And you can follow me. Reach out if you have questions, comments, complaints, whatever it may be. I'm at @TheOtherMJordan on X. And you can also subscribe to my weekly Bitcoin newsletter. That's blackhatbitcoin.substack.com. Again, appreciate you being here. Until next time, this is Michael Jordan signing off.